Okay, this is continuing with Bernd Kral on 12 August 1981. And so you said you received an offer of a job.
Yes, after this, after holding this lecture, I got an invitation whether I were interested to go to Bonn. At the same time, got another invitation to get a position at Tübingen, which was another place in Germany.
And what was going on there?
At Tübingen, they planned to do something in Weissenau. I don't really know what the plans were. I think at that time they didn't have anything. Somebody who went there was a fellow from Telefunken. His name is Orbatz.
How do you spell that?
Then later on, U-B-A-R-Z, Orbatz. Mm-hmm. He later on went to Tübingen.
But then,
I could have stood in Kiel too, but I didn't have any interest to stay where I had been, and so I went to Bonn because, and of course, Bonn was a very growing new facility then.
Right.
And perhaps it's interesting to tell something about the attitude to astronomy, to radio astronomy, of the founder of this, which was Professor Becker.
Yes. I have not been able to.
Yes, he's still alive in Munich.
I'm sorry, I did talk to him on the phone.
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I forgot. Anyway,
I think you may remember that I think there was just the idea for Professor Becker that one should more or less buy such an instrument. I think I can't go back into the time when he took the first idea, when he had the first idea of building the Stockton antenna. But anyhow, when I entered into the institute and later on understanding how the business was going, I think it was a typical attitude of astronomers of the old past, buying some good instruments from some factory. And then use
from
it
Zeiss or something.
From Zeiss or whoever. And so he asked industry to do something. But that was not the only idea. You should not forget, you mentioned it in your lecture or introduction, that there was all high directivity antennas and all TVs of this type were forbidden to Germany after the Second World War.
And when did that exactly end? Do you remember?
No, not. Yeah. My heart. It should be found out, as it is mostly such restrictions were
gradually
decreased, and no one looked at it. And maybe that even the Kiel antenna was something
illegal,
which was not allowed at that time.
Yeah.
I think it was somewhat, may have been somewhat beyond
the regulations.
Regulations.
Yeah, okay.
And some people came back from foreign countries who were interested in the. Who had been active in the field of radar and high frequencies during World War, and who had worked on the Würzburg dishes and all these things, and one of the main persons in the who was in the government of Nordrhein-Westfalen in West Germany was he's mentioned somewhere in the Telefunken.
Yeah, I think I know who you mean. It's escaping me right now. Go ahead.
Anyhow, and he was he saw that there might be an opportunity to combine the interests of astronomers. I don't know where they met, of those people who were interested in telecommunication techniques and radar to build one new big antenna, which might be useful for both purposes.
No, anyway,
it's in the there was a first big booklet on the when the 25 meter dish was taken into operation,
right.
And he made the guiding words. This gentleman.
No, I know
he had been at Telefunken, and
I know who you mean. I just can't think of the name myself.
He was very enthusiastic and very well able to convince everybody in the press and so on, that something like this might be necessary.
Right.
So he really was the guiding man to that something that
right.
like that should be done. And as it is sometimes, he really understood that doing something for radar only might not be useful. And so he thought, take the astronomers and put it together and make it an antenna for both purposes. In the end, the antenna was used for the first time only for radio astronomy and not very much for any type of radar work. Although the building was split up and there were two halves, and one had a control decks which was especially prepared for doing radar work.
For a transmitter and so forth?
No, there was no good room for transmitter, but anyhow there was a special control desk for doing the radar work and another one for doing the radar astronomy,
with an
analog converter like the Dutch head.
Yes.
And there were big switches in the center of the building where you could switch from radio astronomy to radar.
I see.
Yes, it's a 100-point switching.
Right, but now, is the conversion in the coordinates, you mean, that you would go from an Azel telescope to an equatorial telescope, is that what you mean, or what kind of conversion would there be?
It was an alpha azimuth instrument.
Right.
I needed, of course, an alpha-delta azimuth elevation transformation.
So you did that in an analog fashion with a
yes,
a
it was the same type of instrument, analog instrument, which had been used by the Dutch.
In Dwingeloo. Right, okay.
Yes. And
But was the dish ever used for radar astronomy?
Yes, no, not for radar astronomy. It was used for radar.
What kind of radar?
Well, we were not informed, it was more or less secret.
Oh, it was military, I see.
It was kind of a military research which had been performed for some years, but not at the very beginning. And later on they did it for some years, say on a partial basis. And after that, these people got another dish, which still exists.
Can you tell me roughly when this radar research began? About what year?
No, it's difficult now, but I think... When did I start there?
You said you started in 57. You got your thesis.
From here? What is that?
Your thesis was 57.
57, so 58, maybe 64, 65.
Oh, it started that late. I see.
Yes, then they got some time. Yes, they had no transmitter.
I see.
Up to that time of high power, but then they used them.
Okay. Now, can you tell me where Becker fits in? He was the professor of physics.
No, Becker was the real director of the Astronomical Institute of Bonn.
I see.
And what kind very of, old...
what kind of research had he done?
I don't really know what his special points of interest were. I think stellar astronomy
I'll have to look that up. Yeah. I didn't realize he was a classical astronomer, though.
A real classical astronomer.
I see. But anyway, he became...
It may be that he had some special interest in galactic structure. And that was the reason why he planned to use the instrument at first, and perhaps at the first time only, for 21 centimeters.
Yes. Right.
I think his brother was very much interested in galactic structure too. And he was in Basel.
In Basel?
Basel, yes.
And his brother's name is what?
Friedrich Becker was ours, and Wilhelm Becker, I think, was his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that he intended to do some cooperation with his brother.
I see. But in any case, he became enthusiastic from the influence of this person whose name we cannot remember, that a dish was a good thing to have, and so he supported it.
I don't know where they met.
Yeah.
Somewhere they may have met regarding how to get money and...
Where did the money come from?
I think the biggest amount came from the district government of North Rhine-Westphalia, which is a part of the Federal Republic of Germany.
Right. Okay, so when you came to this new dish, what kind of work did you do on it?
I tried to learn how to operate a big instrument, because I just knew how to move a small antenna from one position to the other, and azimuth and elevation, taking all coordinates from some kind of analog transforming, and so on. And this instrument was very powerful. It had a coordinate transformation in it, and it had a lot of feedback loops and so on, which had to be understood. And at that time, the receiver for observing 21 centimeter line was just ready, and we were asked to do some work with it. I did not get any indication what one should do, and so priesthood meant one should do some kind of surveying of a special part of the galactic plane, and I entered into this business.
Did you go up and talk with the Dutch at all, who were, of course, very much involved in this kind of thing?
We had received the Dutch results, but no, there was not very much contact for me. I know we were a beginner, just very well at a starting point, and try to understand how things were going, and we had a lot of repairing. The mixer became bad. We had to look for better dials and so on. We did a lot of tuning all the days.
Now, when you say we, who was the staff at that time?
Staff were Metzger was there, and Müller.
Priester.
I think he went more or less a little bit outside that.
I see.
Yes, I don't know what he did at that time.
Maybe
later on, he went into the satellite,
into space,
right. Research. But even at that time, he was not very active, in observing. And I were out at the instrument for about half a year, and tried to do the observations day and night, and sleeping there. There was some kind of automation already, so it's what was necessary to stay. Be up all the time. Line profile took about 2 hours.
So was it a single channel, or did you have
single channel receiver at that time? Yes.
Right. This Müller you mentioned is the one who is H.G. Müller, that's now at Sheffield University.
Yeah.
Right. And he was primarily an engineer working with the receivers.
His interests were more of an engineering kind, and I don't know what he did at that time. I think he tried to develop something. At the end, he developed a very broadband system. He was very, very Anglophile, and he tried to get a very beautiful broadband traveling wave amplifier, two-channel system with each two traveling wave tubes, and use this for radio astronomy, taking the advantage of a big bandwidth, which led to difficulties afterwards, as I mentioned, due to the interference situation.
Right. So you.
And the end was, you shouldn't write it down first, but at the end he was looking at the interference of radar in his on a scope, and I see him sitting down saying, "Oh, how beautiful!" And he became more and more interested in the radar, and so at last he left and went to Sheffield,
right,
where he did radar work.
Right. Not a true astronomer.
But I don't know. He did some observation with this receiver, but this receiver suffered by the fact, and another one. We tried to use the low noise traveling wave tube too, but all this suffered by the fact of the big distance between the feed and the receivers, which had to be set up somewhere on the ground floor.
There was not a focus box?
This antenna had never had a focus box. It was all the time equipped with nowadays one would say a secondary focus cabin, which was not tilted. But from this cabin there was a big coaxial line to the focus. Later on, when Hachenberg came to the Stuttgart, this antenna was rebuilt, a Cassegrain.
When did that happen, roughly? He's probably told me. But this is 65 or something, a good bit later, or was it earlier?
Maybe 65, yes. And about 70, I think, the FS Spectre was under construction,
right.
So it must have been before. So I was involved in the adjustment of the customer interest then.
Now, so it seems like the 21 centimeter work that you did was, as you said, you were just beginners and you just decided you're going to map a region of the galactic plane.
Yes, the only point which was of some interest, and this should have been followed up by somewhat more by me, but I didn't get any encouragement. So it was, somewhat a pity. I said that the Dutch type of aggregating the data, just taking maximum temperature as the kinetic temperature of the gas, and then calculating the optical depth after that, was not the only beautiful way. I thought one should make a Gaussian analysis of the profiles, and try to do that by the very simple means of graphic.
Oh yes.
What one could do at that time.
No computers then.
We put Gaussian profiles and try to add them up and try to fit it just without a computer.
Yeah.
And I remember Westarhout came to Bonn, and he was he made very bad words about doing it that way, and not using the Dutch method of evaluating the profiles. And,
right.
I was somewhat disturbed about his opinion. I think nowadays he may think something
right.
else, then, somewhat else about that.
But then, of course, the Dutch did do that later.
In the mid-60s in Groningen. Yes, they did it much more. And at that time, we had a fellow who was rather interested in computer work and tried to set up the first program of this type, too. But
what was his name?
Gernstein. Mm-hmm. He's now in the computer division. At the end, I think really... radio astronomy did not flourish at the moment, and I did not see.
What do you think is the reason for that?
I think it came more or less from two points of view. One was that Becker was not giving any encouragement and no backing for anybody to do something very special, and Priester went out step by step. He was not very happy in cooperation with Metzger, and so he thought about other things. And so radio astronomy just
languished.
We tried. Then later on, the instrument was used by Altenhof sometime from Münster. There was Professor Strasser
right.
from Münster who sent Altenhof to Bonn. And, later on, I tried to do some more technical activity, building up a filter spectrometer then, but that was already at a time when the approach of FSB came.
Right, and then all attention went to that.
Yes.
How far is Stockert from the city of Bonn?
It's about 40 kilometers.
I've never actually visited it.
It's on a hill.
That's
yes.
right.
Yes, at that time one built antennas on the hill, especially because of the radar.
Right.
Yes, that was one of the most interesting points for them, probably, that this was held as an instrument, therefore very useful for radar.
Right, right. But there were obviously no radio astronomers who were telling them that, no, this is not where we want to put this dish.
At that time we did not believe in interference. We didn't know what interference was. I remember... observed a thunderstorm 21 centimeters. That was very interesting.
let me just go back. You mentioned the possibility of going to Tübingen. There never was any radio astronomy done at Tübingen.
Later on it was.
How much later?
Yes, I don't know how it happened to Tübingen. Originally, there was some radio astronomy done at Freiburg.
Yes.
At Kippenheuer.
Yes.
The name of the fellow who went there was...
Graben?
Raben. Yes,
yes,
you are right. And he was very much convinced by the Australian work, and he tried to set up a spectrometer there. And this spectrometer was used
for the sun,
for solar work. And this instrument was used for several years at Freiburg. And then it was, I think, voluntary, Kippenhauer switched off and tried to get rid of it. And then it went to Siedentorf. Siedentorf was interested in everything.
Siedentorf?
Far, yeah.
Right. Now, that's another name I know. I've never talked to him.
No, he's dead.
He's dead now.
Yeah, already since 7 years.
And he was at Tübingen?
He was at Tübingen. And Siedentorf was interested in everything. Everything related to astronomy and physics and all kinds of combinations. That means he made experiments, as far as I remember, of scattering of light and all things of this kind.
And when did that transfer take place, roughly?
Not very. We were talking about the early 60s, perhaps.
Early 60s?
Maybe. And then there was some improvement of that. It went on at Tübingen.
That's getting past my area. Well, that's pretty much the sort of things that I want to cover. Is there anything else that you want to say about the development up until the early 60s in Germany? Or?
No, I don't believe that there's much to tell about that. You know about the survey. I think, again, that the access to the calibration problem I did was in principle right, and it was some kind of step forward, although not of the accuracy which we need today.
But it was a shame that it wasn't applied to actually do the survey after all that work. Yeah.
Yes, but to draw a big survey was a big, very big job at that time. And even doing a thesis needed a lot of calculations, as I did, and perhaps this is something which I should mention. I needed to make a coordinate information for each point of the survey, right, to make the folding process with my antenna characteristics.
By folding, you mean
yes,
convolution?
The convolution, yes, the convolution process. Yes, we name it in German, it's Faltung.
Right.
The convolution had to be done of the existing survey for a special time of the day with my antenna pattern.
Yes.
And
all by hand.
I had all the coordinate transfer information were done by a simple system which had been developed during the Second World War, which was a kind of rotational diagram with a microscope on it, where the two scales were on it.
Plastic?
Yes, had to be rotated. It was precise to some lengths of arc, I think, or at least a quarter of a degree or so. And this was sufficient for my purpose. But anyhow, all this had then the characteristics and the survey had to be put together and multiplied by desk computer.
Right? Yeah. A lot of work. Okay, well, thank you very much.
That ends the interview with Grahl on 12 August 1981 at IRSI.